It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is number 323, and my name is Joey here with Len. We are giving you the audio sidekick to the weekly Access of Easy newsletter. You can sign up for Access of Easy at accessofeasy.com if you don't like listening to us, although you should. And on top of the stories, we cover you just a bunch more every week, two, three, four, five more stories on top of the main four or five that we cover. But before we start, you know, Len, the usual stuff, buddy. What's going on over there? How you doing?
It's all everything all good. Just doing a lot of housework. Got the laundry going right now. Got to do a couple of loads of that. It's just, I'm domesticated, man. I'm a domesticated man. How are you, Joey?
I'm good. In the studio here, we're making progress. Things are looking up, looking good. Got my Lakers nesting dolls. I don't know if you can see them. My wife bought me those in Estonia, I think. And it's like a mix of eras. Shaq, Kobe, Derek Fisher, and then Vlade Divac, who was actually traded for the rights to Kobe Bryant. So something.
I thought it would miss somebody from when it was Minnesota Lakers.
That would have been nice, but no. Who like Jabbar or something?
No.
Was he on that team? He might have been.
Was he in the Bucks before he came to?
Ah, that's right. The Bucks. You're right about that. Yeah.
And he did really well for the first few years with the Bucks too. And then
Lou Alcindor, a lot of people say, is the best college basketball player who ever lived. So make it that what you will.
I have nothing to add to that. This is beyond me.
I'm telling you. So
the fact that I knew that Kareem played in for the Bucks is more than enough. that's stretching my NBA knowledge.
Good sports knowledge from you. You're usually the sports guy. Anyway, so we got the usual housekeeping items here. We'll start with the quote from last week, of course. Your visions will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside, dreams. Who looks inside, awakes. That was by Carl Jung. And just as the week before, we had a number of people chime in at around the same time, but Lee was the first chimer. So congrats to Lee for that. And this week's quote, then, civil disobedience is not our problem. Our problem is civil disobedience. Who's that by? If you know.
Our problem is civil obedience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I should say that again. Yeah. Civil disobedience is not our problem. Our problem is civil obedience. True. Are those words truer today than in the recent past? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. And it's probably a lot of people close to Canadians, maybe, that people might say saying that. Yeah. Who the heck knows? Maybe Americans.
Hard to say.
A lot of different options out there. Let me just say that.
Yeah. Something going on there. Something to that quote. The rules is always don't look it up. No cheating. Put it in the comments. And you get your next domain renewal or hosting renewal on Mark and team at EasyDNS. So you can't beat that. Now, Len, we got, I think, five stories, if I counted correctly.
Yeah,
to talk about tonight. Let's hop in if you're ready.
Yeah, let's talk about Amazon. They may be showing their true colors. Some people might be saying that. Amazon, they've been using a secret algorithm called Project Nessie, and this is to raise prices and increase their profits. This is all according to a lawsuit that's been filed by the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, just this past week. And the FTC alleges that Amazon used this Project Nessie to predict and match price hikes from other retailers, and then they use this information to raise their own prices. The FTC's lawsuit is actually, it's the latest of a series of antitrust challenges against Amazon, which they've been accused of its market dominance to stifle competition. Okay, I mean, there may be some truth to that, but I mean, you got to prove that. The company, they've denied all wrongdoing, obviously, and they said that they're going to vigorously defend itself against all these FTC allegations. But the lawsuit, if successful, could force Amazon to change its pricing practices and make it easier for competitors to compete. Okay. Looking at this story, Joey, this is maybe you're going to look at this, look at me odd here. This doesn't bother me all that much. This story doesn't
What is the story in your opinion?
The fact that they're price matching and increasing prices when competitors do that. If they want to do that, I have no problems with it.
I don't know what the story is, honestly.
Yeah, if people don't like it, I don't know what the FTC's why they're so pissed off about it. if people don't like Amazon's practices, they could vote with their pocketbook and go somewhere else. And you know what? In today's environment, local vendors are going to be dying to get money coming in. This extra business, they'll just be dying to get it. And they'll probably go the extra mile to ensure that they get it. So if you don't like what Amazon's doing, and if you believe the FTC is correct in these allegations, then don't use Amazon. But you know what? It sounds like you and I are on the same page, because I have nothing bad to say about this. They could do what they want, and people could choose to vote with their pocketbook.
How many online vendors have something like this to look at Amazon prices, and they use that to decide what their pricing power is before they determine what the cost of their goods should be online? I would guess a lot of people use similar stuff. I don't know if it's to the same extent. The complaint really is that Amazon is basically forcing unsustainable prices on its, basically on its users, right? It's not the people who are necessarily patronizing Amazon, but the people who are posting their wares there. Okay. Amazon, like, look, the problem, like you mentioned, okay, is not the price thing. The price thing is how you compete these days in the marketplace. It's pretty dog eat dog in online retail. And so, you know, anyone who uses Instagram or Twitter or whatever knows that there's ads to buy something literally every 5 seconds. You can't get away from them. They're everywhere. And I think that the thing that I would point to for these vendors who are saying, well, I don't want my prices to be low. Well, then leave, right? You're getting to the same point where, you know, there's ways to illustrate this, but let's just say that if you don't like what Amazon's doing, you can pick up and leave with your product. The problem is people are selling junk that's basically just drop shipped based on Amazon orders. And so my suggestion to these people would be, don't sell junk products. I mean, anyone who uses Amazon knows. I'll give you an example, okay? I bought an iPhone 15 a couple months ago now, and I always do the same thing when I buy a new phone. I try and get a couple of cases because I like having a couple of cases to switch between. People who watch the show and CDP know, like, every week I got a different case on this stupid thing. But the reason that, you know, the reason you end up leaving Amazon as a shopper sometimes, and these vendors should really think about this too, is that all the stuff there is just like Chinese trinket junk quality, like garbage. And so if you want to compete with Amazon and get away from the price problems that you claim you're having, the solution is really get your products off Amazon and build out a little bit of an e-commerce system on your own, right? Maybe with Shopify's help or whatever. But this idea that Amazon should be responsible for driving prices of your goods down, I'm completely at a loss. Amazon has a fiduciary responsibility to its shareholders, and that is to get people on the site, get people buying, and get people buying in volume. Period, end of story. And if you don't like that, then, you know, there's other options for you. They may not be as easy, they may not be as friction free, but there are other options, and that's all that matters, I think, right?
Agreed. Let's move on and talk about an Ontario hospital. That's Ontario hospitals, in fact. I remember seeing this story recently. I knew it was going to be on a future Access of Easy episode, and here we are. It's on the docket. So on October 26th, 5 Ontario hospitals were the target of a ransomware attack. And these hospitals include Hamilton Health Sciences, Niagara Health, Brant Community Healthcare System. This one, I know it's in the Hamilton area. I don't know how to pronounce it. Halimed? Is that right?
Haldimand.
Yeah, and Norfolk General Hospital. So all five are in a very tight area.
I'll give you a little inside baseball. I know this from Wayside. What you're describing there, like Hamilton Health Sciences, and then the other kind of regional, hackies, I guess, in this case, those are not necessarily hospitals. What they are Ontario health teams, I believe they're called now. So you might have like a Hamilton health team that has, you know, Hamilton Health Sciences plus a couple of community agencies and stuff like that, all contributing to, one outcome. And the idea is that they're vertically integrated. So when you say, it was a couple of hospitals, Hamilton Health Sciences is, you know, 10 hospitals, 7 hospitals, probably something like that, plus imaging centers, plus all sorts of other peripheral agencies, institutions, facilities, stuff like that. So it's a lot more than the story kind of leads you to believe.
Well, these attackers, they gain access to what they claim the hospital's computer systems, and also the encrypted data they got access to. It. They demanded a ransomware payment in exchange for the decryption key. So they encrypted the data, and they're asking for the information to be returned to them. with exchange for payment. So the hospital, well, initially they refused, and instead they worked with law enforcement to investigate the attack. And then November 8th, the attackers published some of the stolen data online. That's pretty damning. And the stolen data includes patients' names, addresses, date of birth, medical information. This is pretty severe stuff. And the hospital, they're contacting all the affected patients to notify them the breach, and they're going to provide them with some support. And this is really serious stuff. They are advising people also to monitor their credit score in the meantime, because there's lots that people could do with this information. I don't know what else to say about this, because it's going to be using taxpayer dollars in order to try to rectify this issue. Already, the healthcare system is stretched to its limit. People would say it's underfunded given the population. Population continues to grow at a pretty good clip, but the funding coming into the hospital system is not matching that. Plus, you have to also consider that there's inflation, so there's a rising cost of everything. And if you look at the money going into the healthcare system, it's not matching either of those two things. So they're falling behind year over year. So when they're going to be using some precious wealth, some of the money used that they could be put towards improving the patient experience at hospitals and using this to pay hackers, that's pretty crap, if you ask me. But you know what? They have no option at this particular moment. What are they going to do moving forward? Hopefully they secure their systems. Again, the information they have on file, it is serious stuff. This could really damage an individual if they get this information. If they really want to screw with them, they could really do so with this information. So I don't know what else to say aside from, if you are one of the users or you've used one of these hospitals, whatever you want to call it, in the past, you might be impacted, and you got to figure out a way to rectify the issue, because it could get really bad for you moving forward, especially if they want to screw around with your credit score. You don't want that, especially when it comes time to renew your mortgage and crap like that.
Yeah. Didn't we talk about a little while ago a story where, I don't know if we talked about it or if I saw it in the news, where a few Ontario nurses and hospital staff were terminated for looking through the medical history of certain Ontario patients? I believe that was less than 2 months ago, right? Does that sound familiar to you?
No, I don't think it was talked about on this show. So you must have come across it and read it. Yeah. Why you didn't bring it up with us over here, Joey? I do not know.
I don't know. I don't think it crossed my mind, but it's crossed my mind today. And the other thing that I have written down here is, you know, this is maybe low hanging fruit, but I think that it's worth mentioning here. Okay. We just went through a 2-year period where we were told over and over, 3-year period, I guess, we were told over and over and over again that everyone who works at a hospital is a hero and needs to be vaunted. People were banging spoons on pans or whatever on their front porch for a couple of months during COVID. All I've seen from medical professionals in the last 3 years, especially nurses in hospitals, some of whom I know and I'm friends with, if I look on social media, all I see is dancing and having a good time. If I look in the news, all I see is breaching patient privacy laws and not wanting to come to work and not delivering good outcomes. And now I see this story. You know, what are the odds that, again, it's not mentioned in the story, unfortunately, but I think a big question that needs to be answered is how did they get access to the information? Was it an errant browsing incident by one of these dancing nurses, dancing hospital staff? Was it a phishing attack? What was it? I don't know. That's not mentioned in the article. The other thing that's not mentioned, Len, is what information does the hacker have? You know, what are we talking here? You mentioned there's going to be sensitive information, but you know, what exactly is the nature of the data?
They did mention patients' names, the addresses, date of birth,
that's not the worst thing in the world. But it's not detailed enough for me to think that there's not more. You know, if it wasn't worse than the story, then there'd be more details, I think. You know what I mean? And I just, you know, if we think back now, and it's not just from COVID on, but you know, when was the last time the Ontario healthcare system really delivered like a win in the media?
Good question.
You know, it's just terrible.
It's
awful to see this again now.
It's easy to point a loss. It's difficult to point a win when you're dealing with the medical system, because when things go well, you don't notice it. It's like an offensive lineman in the NFL.
These guys have messaging now, right? They have messaging. They could go on Twitter and talk about, you know, wait times are down, hallway medicine is dead. But like there is no there is no data that shows W's for these guys. And now there's more stories about data breaching, overreaching, you know, like it's frustrating because as an Ontarian, obviously we pay, you know, an ungodly amount of taxes to the government for things like healthcare and other critical services. And we just don't seem to be getting any of them. And, you know, this is an example of one of those critical services, in my eyes, anyways, getting worse. And we deserve better than that from what basically are public servants, right? Nurses are public servants, doctors are public servants, IT professionals in these spaces, public servants. And, you know, to have them basically try and call the hackers bluff and get the rug pulled on them. And now this is the story that comes out. I guarantee we're going to be talking about this again in the next few months because there's going to be more data that leaks. It's almost a sure thing.
If you ever had a chance to be a nurse, would you ever consider it?
No, I went to teachers college, as you know, and I find that I just can't deal with, you know, I'm not even gonna say it because it'll probably just get me in trouble, but you can imagine, you know, the whims and desires of the public, not my favorite thing. And so I don't think I could have a job like that.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to get at. It's, and I say this with all due respect, it's a crappy job because you are dealing with people at their absolute worst. They'll give you the most attitude, sure, and they will have very little leeway with anything with you. And in my eyes, I'll even go a little bit further. They don't get paid enough.
No, they don't.
You know, for what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it, they don't get paid enough, you know, but maybe some people say I'm wrong, but that's my point of view.
Oh, we could go deep. Like we could, one of these days, you know, if we ever do work in the same place again, we could have a nice lunch discussion about the downfalls of unions. You know, I think you could point to a union as a big problem in nursing. You know, they want more members. And so that means that naturally the kind of education requirements are pretty low. And again, like not to point fingers at some of the people I know and have known over the years, but you know, I don't know any nurses who I would, you know, have as my call a friend lifeline on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I'll tell you that. So, you know, just leave it there, I guess, and go to the next story.
All right. We'll talk about APIS. And APIS, I think that's the pronunciation from what I gather. So APIS, we'll call it APIS. It's okay. A telecommunications firm in Australia. They suffered a network failure on October 4th. And this caused widespread disruption across the country of Australia, and transport delays, hospital phone outages, payment system outages were just amongst the few of the disruptions being reported. And according to APIS, more than
is 10... it APIS or Optus?
Optus.
I'm not sure.
I don't even know.
Sure.
It's an access from down under, and obviously I'm so far from it. And this telecommunications company with more than 10 million people and thousands of businesses that are customers, they were affected as a result of this. And for around 12 hours, service was out. Eventually, it was restored after about 12 hours. So this cause is still being investigated. That's
amazing.
Troubling because this happened a month ago, and it was down for some time, half a day, and it's still not sure exactly what happened. And during that time, as I mentioned, customers were not able to receive calls, send or receive text messages. Who's sending text messages these days? Or access the internet? And this affected both individuals and businesses alike. And this is not the first time this company has suffered a major network failure. In 2021, the company also experienced a major outage that affected millions of customers. And also in 2020, another disruption of service that affected a lot of their customers. And this is starting to raise the questions and concerns about the reliability of the telecommunications network in Australia. And the Australian government, they're getting down to it. They say they're going to be investigating the outage and ensure none of this happens again, blah, blah, blah. And we are, as a society, becoming more and more reliant on services like this. And there was a time not too long ago, this service would have been considered a luxury. But now having a cellular service is now a necessity for a majority of people. Then, if that's the case, what are the options moving forward? Do you nationalize things? Do you increase competition? I don't know what is the remedy to all this, but clearly what's working in Australia isn't. Hopefully we get to the bottom of this and try to find a solution so this does not happen again. Because as we continually move forward as a society, we will need these services even more. So this is going to impact people even more. People don't have cash. In fact, Australia are trying to get rid of cash in their system. So people, they will have no way to pay for anything. So if you have to fill up your gas tank, buy groceries, whatever, if you don't have internet service, you are SOL. And that's a way people are going to come up with pitchforks and torches and just make sure that they could fix things one way or another. But we hope we don't get to that point. You know what? I wasn't just even talk about Bitcoin, but I won't. We'll leave it at that. So
someone's got to explain to me how they're investigating this. Like, you can't just tell people that their network went down for a day and you don't know what happened and you hope it doesn't happen again. Like, that's not an option. Like, didn't that happen? It happened here last summer, right? Or two summers ago now, I guess, with Rogers. For a day, basically. Like, yeah. I don't, now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like I've been pacified. Like, I never even found out what happened with them. You know, that's obviously a Canadian company. The one thing I thought was interesting about this is, unlike the name would kind of have you believe, that Optus is actually owned by a company from Singapore. I can't remember the name of the company, but like another example of just outsourcing to other, you know, corporations that aren't going to do a good job. There's probably not much accountability. It doesn't look like they are, you know, even remotely interested in breaking down the risks or sharing some of the information about the breach, assumed breach, I guess, on my part, but with the public, with their customers. I think the most important thing to remember here is, if, again, like similar to the story earlier, if there's not more details shared that are favorable in terms of spinning a narrative, a public-facing narrative about a certain event, then the public has to assume and should assume that the occurrence was worse than originally thought. And especially because it's happened, I think you said a month or 2 months ago, if there's been no move on this, you have to imagine that a company that size with that many customers is trying with all the firepower they have to figure out what happened, and they're not making any progress. Or, like I mentioned earlier, it's so bad they can't share it. In either case, it's so important, I think, for people to realize that, you know, whether it's Bitcoin or other stuff, like you can't rely on these like data networks like Rogers, you know, for your phone or the debit card companies I shouldn't say debit card companies, those are banks, but the Interac Rails, I should say, to be working all the time to live your day-to-day life. You can't rely on them. They're going to become juicier and juicier attack vectors for people who want to cause trouble. And as we've seen doing this show over the last 5 or 6 months now, very rarely, Len, do we ever get a clean resolution and explanation of what happened with these types of things, whether it's something as large as an Australian telecom company or something as small as, I don't know, what's a good example, you know, like a phishing scam, like that's $250,000 for some guy in Russia somewhere. We hardly ever get a clean resolution, and that should worry people. We should be getting those things, and you have to assume if you don't get it, it's because either they couldn't figure it out or it's too damning to share with the public. So be on the lookout for that.
Do you carry cash?
I don't carry cash, but I do, obviously, like I have Bitcoin. I have, I don't know, my chain and my wedding ring, I guess. Like, if we go south, I'm in trouble, I guess. Eh?
I carry enough to fill up my car. That's the golden rule. There have been times that my card has been compromised and I have no other alternative but to pay with cash. So that's, I always do that. I always have enough cash to fill up my car, and anything beyond that, I'm going to be, you know, screwed, but at least I could do that or buy a little bit of groceries and everything. So that's, I would suggest for anybody out there, they should either do this like that, or even a little bit more, a little bit of a buffer, because you never know when systems will go down and you'll need that cash. Like, if you don't have it, you might as well not have any money in the bank account, because there's no way to pay for anything.
Yeah. So
that's just my own personal opinion.
Or even have like a second option, right? Like, I know in the past I lost my credit card and debit card, both compromised, or both stolen out of my car, I should say. They were stolen out of my car. And, you know, thank God this isn't CBP. I ended up just transferring a bunch of money from my checking account using my online banking service into my ShakePay account and using the ShakePay card for a week or two as like my primary. But you could do it, right? Like, there's other options. And also, like, just as an aside here, there's, I think, a misconception about these new kind of come lately companies that want to do debit cards and credit cards and things of this nature, Wealthsimple, ShakePay, whatever. And people who are a little older than you and me would say, well, it's not really established, could be dangerous, you don't know what kind of security. Those companies are the most secure. It's companies like TD, RBC, CIBC, hospitals, schools, government outfits, where they've become stagnant and security has become a lost priority for these institutions. Clearly, we see this all the time. It's the new guys who understand how important security is and the old dogs who don't. So make your decision wisely about where you spend your money and what you rely on.
If there's going to be any hack against a bank, they have the ability to replenish the funds. These other sure companies, they may not have the deep pockets. They could pull apart from somebody else's, you know, fractional reserve works really well for a bank because they have so much liquidity over there. I mean, comparatively speaking. So that's let's move on though. We'll talk about LinkedIn, and they're getting their data scraped yet again.
Love it. So this is 2 weeks in a row, I think, right? I'm pretty sure this is back to back for LinkedIn. First of its kind for our stints with this show, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, some hacker that they're calling a hacker is having a field day. And this was following a leak of information. The same dude was doing the same thing about Twitter and the FBI security platform InfraGuard. So he's been very active. He's attacked Twitter and that InfraGuard platform. So this very same hacker, he runs under the account called USDOD. I'd love to know what that stands for, USDOD. Do you have any idea? Like,
he probably thinks it's Department of Defense or some kind of spin on that. I don't know exactly what the aim is.
Wouldn't it be DND or am I wrong?
DND is National Defense, right? That's a Canadian
department. Well, maybe because I think
it's Department of Defense. Yeah, I think it's Department of Defense in the States. I think, okay. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, anyways, USDOD has been leaking info about LinkedIn on something called breach forums. So around 35 million LinkedIn records, they've been, well, compromised, containing personal information, and it's all been amalgamated on this guy's database. And he's been doing this all through, from what I gather, web scraping. So it doesn't seem to be a real hack job. He's just getting information that is publicly available.
It's not much, but it's hard. It's honest work. It's honest work.
Well, it's freely available, right? Like, it's not like he used some nefarious ways to go through a back door. He just was able to, I guess, hammer away and just go through site after site after site, get the information, add it to his database. He got names, profiles, bios, the email addresses, and it's, you know, no passwords they say have been stolen. So again, it doesn't seem like it's a hack, but again, this is very valuable information nonetheless. What this proves more than anything is you should be very careful what it is you want to put out there in the public domain. Because just because it's there and it may be on LinkedIn or some similar website doesn't mean that somebody's going to be able to not go and extract that information and use it for a way to profit. So this is just a call to action out there, is please be more careful as to what information you put online. You don't know who's going to be using that against you, because it obviously if you're going to put your name and stuff like that, well, that's more than enough. And I suggest people be more careful with your information, up to date. It seems like many people, millions of people, tens of millions, they're not. And I can understand why, because LinkedIn is a great platform to try to get a job and try to advance your career. But you gotta be careful. That's all I gotta say.
You do have to be careful. And people are not careful. And so our friend USDOD is able to just do a little scrape job and get all this information. I think the question about this story is, why is a website called Breach Forum allowed to exist? Like, why is anyone shutting that down? How many times we do stories on this, on this flipping show about all these different organizations at the UN level, government level, like NGO, international NGO level, talking about misinformation, user safety, protecting identities, protecting kids. But no one ever thinks to look up like these standard web addresses, like the breach forums. Where is the UN declaration on the breach forums? Where is that? Are we going to get that sometime soon? When is that coming? Are they too busy shutting down podcasts to get to breach forums? Is that somewhere down the list? We're up higher than that.
There's been action against this. In fact, they've been trying to seize the domain. So there's been.
What do you mean trying? What do you mean trying? What does that mean? How do you not just get it? This is what I don't understand. The domain is, you know, you go to the guy who's got the domain, take it away, block it, whatever. The feds seize domains all the time. They can't do this? They can't figure this out? What am I missing here, Len? Help me out.
I don't know the technicalities for domain seizures and what's required for this. So there could be some complexities to it. And it may be just as simple as making a phone call, or it could be more complexities to it that is requires a lot of people that need to have their palms greased. Who the hell knows? So I honestly, all I can see here is though that they are working to try to get this thing shut down. In fact, one of the head honchos there was arrested this year by law enforcement for charged with conspiracy and access to device fraud. And it gets kind of sad here because after he was arrested, he attempted to commit suicide in his home when he was released on bail. So when I see attempted to commit, it looks like he was unsuccessful. So he's still with us. So yeah, there's a lot to this. And they're saying that there may be some child pornography involved here. And who the heck knows? But yeah, there's a lot to this. But you know, this US DOD he's using this website as a gateway to show off what he's been doing.
Yeah,
and you know what? Maybe that's a poor judgment call on his part, because if this breach forms is under the eyes of authorities, they're going to be able to figure out, unless he's using Tor and a VPN, they'll be able to figure out where this US DOD guy is coming from. But you know what? Given the fact he went after the IRS, that's FBI InfraGuard, I'm pretty sure he's taken a lot of precautions to see to see his identity. So,
good point.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add to that?
That's it. We're good.
Well, we could go to the last story. Then we'll talk about Singapore's Marina Bay Sands. So Singapore makes it into this show twice, because you mentioned them earlier. And so the Singapore dollar, people should invest in that if they want to really look at it. It's a long-standing joke. So hackers. It's
a staple of all successful portfolios, the Singapore dollar.
So I have half my investment in
that's US. It?
In the Singapore dollars. Anyways, hackers, they've been gained access to personal information of around 600,000 plus customers of Marina Bay Sands. And the stolen data includes the typical stuff, name, email addresses, phone numbers, and country of residence. And the company, they're working with cybersecurity experts to investigate the incident. And Marina Bay Sands is also, they've reported the breach to the relevant authorities, so obviously they're doing their part there. But the sources believe that the hackers exploited a vulnerability in the company's website. There always seems to be some sort of loophole in a website people are able to get access. The vulnerability allowed hackers to inject malicious code into the website and then gave them access to the customer's database. So this breach was discovered back in February of this year. The company then notified customers in March, and they've been offering, get this, free credit monitoring and identity theft protection services.
I love that.
To affected customers. And then they're obviously dealing with the cooperating authorities, Singapore police, and everybody else. So if you are the Marina Bay Sands customer, I would suggest you figure out what's going on, change your passwords, or maybe even ask to have your account deleted, because they are not very good at keeping your data safe. But also you have to monitor your credit score. Again, there could be suspicious activities in your credit reports. Keep an eye on that. And I don't know what else to say. This is just another situation where people are getting their information hacked, and well, at least they're getting free credit monitoring services.
I love it. These guys, they couldn't secure your data, and then they want to give you for free a service that will secure your data that either they didn't use or they did use and didn't work. It's just, it's amazing stuff, Len. We're truly living in like an incredible timeline where information about data security for both users and the companies who secure the data is widely available. You can get professional consulting. You can get, you know, antivirus programs that are popular from just about any vendor. You can get corporate security suites. EasyDNS will help you with security if you want. And yet every week there is just more fresh meat for this show, and it's the same stuff. The website's got a fault, the website's got a vulnerability, phishing email, customer data compromised. It's the same kind of the line all the time is about the same. And I think, Len, like, you know, we talked about this before, like where does the blame lie here? Part of me, you know, especially after this week, I can't imagine that like the hospitals don't have some kind of IT protection, as stagnant as it may be, as I mentioned earlier. I can't imagine Marina Bay Sands or whatever the name of the place is doesn't have some kind of IT security infrastructure. Is the problem with the competence of these security outfits? Like, are they just assuming that the customers they're servicing don't have the knowledge to understand whether or not the product is any good? That's gotta be part of the problem, isn't it?
It's the complexity of the code. You know, when you're talking about tens, hundreds of thousands of line of code for some of these products they're offering, it's hard to figure out and close all the loopholes. You could look at, I mean, Linux, it's millions of lines of code, for instance, for the kernel. How could you ensure that
you can't,
right? The best you could do is once it comes up, you patch it and you close that hole. But the more complex these things get, it gets more challenging to ensure that it's safe from all different attack vectors. And I think the same applies here. Just things get more, people want more things included on their services. So they have to make it more complex in terms of on the programming. Sometimes it's a hack job when they do it, when they just try to, and then that's, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. So it could be some of it incompetence, but I'm going to chalk this one up mostly to complexity of code.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
There's one more story I'm going to bring up. I know it's not on the docket. I just want to very, very quickly, because it ties into our world. CoinSmart, apparently there's an anonymous tip out there. You know, it's CoinSmart, the exchange.
Yeah.
So there's an anonymous tip that's been posted on the Bitcoin CA subreddit and saying out there that there's a possible data breach. Nothing confirmed at this particular moment, but the person that posted this saying that he has seen some screenshots of CoinSmart phishing emails. So it looks like somebody there may be some validity to this. So they're trying to get people's information through these phishing emails, and they're using the information they obtained through the data breach from CoinSmart. So that's last thing I have to say about this. It's just more of a, if you are a CoinSmart user, potentially figure out what's going on, because maybe your information was stolen.
Just use Bull Bitcoin. That's where you should be buying your Bitcoin anyways. That's it for Access of Easy.
Unless you lose all your information, then you can just load up some other one and use that the pseudo credit card they have.
Either way. That was Access of Easy 323. Don't forget, like the video on YouTube, subscribe to the channel on YouTube, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and sign up for the newsletter. You get, I think, $10 off or something if you just give your email on accessvc.com and get the newsletter sent right to your inbox every Friday. So yeah, look into that. It's worth it. Len and I find great value in it. And he's made a reader out of me for sure. I'm sure that Joan and Mark have made a reader out of you too, whether forced or otherwise. I always enjoy the stories and have some good talks with you about them on Thursday nights. So anyway, that's it, everyone. Until next time, take care of yourself.
Yeah, take care.
I got to shut the recording off. Hold on.
I could take care of it.